Cats don't drink cocktails, I said. Cats don't shoot lasers from their eyes either, but here we are, Carl. Mama needs a night off.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are bringing you all of the internet's most popular books. You just heard the queen of book talk currently, Princess Donut. We're going to let you know whether or not they're worth your time. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Casey. Today, we are returning to a real favorite of the book talk universe. It's the second book in the Dungeon Crawler Carl series by Matt Dinneman, called Carl's Doomsday Scenario. So this book picks up where the first one leaves off. There's going to be some automatic spoilers. I don't know why you'd be listening to this episode if you haven't read the first one, because obviously we're going to discuss the first one. It kind of picks up where Carl and Donut left off. They're going down into the next floor. And so we're kind of just back in the same issue, watching them fight for their lives, watching them try to figure out what's happening outside of the games, getting more rewards, leveling up so that they can keep fighting monsters.
That's the best you could do for non-spoilers.
Yeah.
They're playing the game.
Right. What is set up in book one continues in book two.
And so, they get to pick like new things for themselves. They get to upgrade themselves, and things get more convoluted, not just survival, more strategy.
Right.
It's all about.
But honestly, like, if you're reading popular books right now and you haven't read the first one, who are you?
Yeah.
Get on it.
Darling of book talk right now. For every gender, every person should read this book as long as you're of age.
Right. Okay. Well, first things first, do you guys have reviews off the internet?
Yes. I didn't know who wanted to go first. I have a 5-star from Storygraph. It says certified banger. Loved how bloody and freaky this one was. Clown faces.
Bloody and freaky. That's every book in this series. Come on, y'all.
Okay, but it didn't start getting freaky until this book.
You're correct.
True. This is the first book, too, where things are actually, like, a little scary. Like, there's tougher bosses, and they're doing a lot of setup for the later books in this book, too, because this level starts storylines that reappear on other floors. Okay, I have a 2-star review. Very interesting. Just said, if you'd like my full review, please consult with my ever patient wife, who has heard a play-by-play of my reactions. And that's it.
Sounds like weird. Poor wife.
Yeah, the poor wife is getting like the worst review possible for a great book.
Yeah, and apparently he did not enjoy the book. So
I have a 5-star review because 1-star reviews were just flat out wrong. At this point, I'm not even sure what's going on, but I'm having a great time.
Yeah, totally fair.
Like, if you never played D&D or video games, it would be very hard to read this book.
I've seen some reviews in the collective like that, and honestly, that's a little confusing to me, because I feel like as long as you understand the concept that video games are based off of, you will get it. Because I've never been a huge video game person outside of like The Sims, and I have no issue understanding like what's going on. I think you just kind of have to be like, I feel like you just kind of have to be like a fantasy minded person, because there's like obviously video game stuff, but a lot of it is built off of fantasy lore. I don't know.
There's so many pop culture references though to guide you along the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, overall, the Goodreads rating is 4.49 out of 5. The Fable rating is 4.4 out of 5. And the Storygraph rating is 4.35 out of 5. So very highly rated sequel to book one. What did you guys give it?
I gave it 4 stars. I gave almost every book in the series 4 stars.
That's so crazy because you're like the...
I am. I don't know what it is. Sometimes there's just too much at the end and it puts me off a little bit. Like, and some things are a little too in the weeds for me. Like, maybe too detailed sometimes. Not that I'm mad about it. Like, I really enjoy... I listen on audio and I enjoy the stories. I don't know. I don't know why I gave them all like 4 stars, but I gave them all 4 stars. They're just not perfect, but I love them. Does that make sense? Just like Princess Donut. She's not perfect, but I love her.
Yeah. Fair enough. I gave the book 5 stars. I really enjoyed, I mean, it's been a while since I've read it. So to be honest, I don't remember it super clearly, but I blew through this one. Like, I think I read this book in a day. I really, really enjoyed the overall plot line in this one. And I thought this one had like a really epic finale. Like, I really enjoyed how everything kind of intersected and came to like a really dramatic, like final rescue kind of thing. However, this book, the immature jokes and vaguely sexist humor bothered me the most. Like, there were a few things that I noted in my Goodreads review that I was like, if this keeps happening in these stories, I'm going to stop reading. There's one character who's like a beautiful woman who's in a thong for no reason. There's like a bunch of tits jokes. Like, there's one joke where a guy's like gets an upgrade and it's like, yeah, it's like buying your girlfriend a new pair of tits. Like, it was like to the point where I was actually aggravated. Luckily, I've read on in the series and I personally feel like this book is the worst one when it comes to that. So the other books did not bother me as much as this one. But yeah, I was actively aggravated during this one.
And I completely agree. This is my lowest rated book of Dungeon Crawler Carl. I give it 3 stars. And personally, I think that was due to how I read it, because I read it like via Kindle Unlimited. And I found that like it wasn't as well paced as some of the other books, but I was listening to those on Audible, and Jeff Hayes is an icon of all icons. And I feel like that's the best way to consume Dungeon Crawler Carl is through audiobook. But I agree. Like, I found the humor a little tactless. I think the AI, and I think it's an interesting case study, because I think the AI's humor is more juvenile. And then as it grows up, it becomes more complex throughout the series and less of those juvenile jokes, but they're always sprinkled in a bit, but they're more intricate and nuanced when you get into like the later books. So I think it always just builds up from here. And so that's why I didn't really love this book. But it did set up a lot of things in the future, which I can now appreciate looking back on it, but it's probably my least favorite book of the series.
Interesting. Yeah, so there we go. Overall, what are you saying?
I was just going to say, it is like a much bigger world building book. Book one is like how the game works. Book two is like the game is more than a game.
I like in this one that you start to meet other characters and you kind of get a more complete perspective on like how the game will progress, because like, again, this is the kind of introduction of characters that are expected to come back and, you know, sequential floors. So I think you get like, you get a broader understanding of the political backdrop too, because a lot of the recurring characters kind of bring in how the game is structured from a political standpoint, which has always been one of my like most favorite parts of the book, is all the stuff that we get outside of the show. So yeah, there's still like a lot of really good stuff in this book. It's just like, I think it's not perfect, but great read.
But you gave it 5 stars.
I know. I mean, I ate it up. So this one is actually, I've read the first 4 books and book 4 is my least favorite in the series. So I think this one still felt really excellently done to me, despite my qualms.
Okay.
All right. Is the book more plot or character driven?
Plot. It's a fucking video game.
Yeah. It's definitely not character.
I mean, there's some great like character development on Princess Donut's part because she's only just now sentient. You should have read book one. That's not a spoiler.
No. Obviously, right. Princess Donut can talk. That's why.
Yeah.
She's Princess Donut.
That's a central part of all the books.
That happens in the first like 5% of book one. So it's really not a spoiler.
Yeah. Obviously, would you read other books by the author? I think Catherine and Caitlin, you guys are both done with the books that are out.
Correct.
Yeah. Recently, sad. And I've read Operation Bounce House.
Yep. For this podcast.
Yeah, we did Operation Bounce House for the podcast and we've all continued on in the series. So obviously,
I forgot we did it for the podcast. Love.
Yeah, even though I didn't like Operation Bounce House.
No, I didn't either.
But we obviously are committed to this author and to continuing on in the series. Okay, how was the pacing of the book? How long did it take you to read?
It took me like a month and a half to read, but that was picking up and putting it back down for long periods of time. And I think that's purely because of how busy my schedule has been in the past few months. And I just didn't have the pace to read it in Kindle form. And that's when I learned, okay, no, I actually need to listen to the audiobooks. And like Caitlin was hyping up the audiobooks to me. And I was like, okay. And then I kept hearing TikToks of the narrator of the audiobooks. And I'm like, okay, no, I really need to like listen to those. So I just kind of in one or two sittings breezed through it by the end. Just so I could get to book three. But technically, this did take a couple of months for me.
I love the audio so much that I listen to them on one time speed and mostly only when I'm in the car. So they actually take me quite a while to read. Hence, I just finished book eight and I started these 7-8 months ago. Also, now I don't know what to do in the car. It's very weird.
Like withdrawal.
Thought about like, starting over.
Committing to one-time speed is probably the biggest, most like underrated compliment I've ever heard. Like,
I'm a fan. I really don't know why I give them all 4 stars, honestly. I tell everybody and their mother to read them.
Yeah.
I don't remember how long it took me. A couple weeks. But the pace is fine. Like, I never have any issue with the pace. Sometimes at the end of the audiobook, so I have to like not be driving or else I'll crash my car because there's too much to digest.
Yeah.
So it might be easier to read some of the convoluted stuff at the end where you can like repeat stuff. But yeah, usually like the last few hours of every one of these books, I go and sit and just like sit and listen, which is crazy. I know.
Yeah. This one took me like a day. I don't know if, you know, if you guys listen to Dungeon Crawler, our first podcast book episode on this series, you guys will know I just like blew through like the first four. Like I was kind of in a slump at work. I was not as busy as I normally am. And I just read them like constantly. I really like that this one felt like kind of a traditional quest novel to me, like very like traditional heroes, like D&D kind of walking around towns and like interacting with locals and kind of learning some like local cultural elements and stuff. Along with like, you know, bandits on the trail kind of thing. And so that was a hit for me. Yeah. And ultimately I found this book to be really exciting by the end. So I also love Mordecai. He's my favorite character in the series and he becomes more important in this book. So
that's a hot take.
I love Mordecai.
For someone who haven't finished the series.
Yeah.
I love Mordecai. What are you talking about?
I'm just saying. Okay. If you ask the internet who their, I'm not saying this is mine. If you ask the internet who their favorite character is, it's a character we have not met yet.
Correct. Yes.
T, I don't think I've met this person either.
I don't
you would not. So I don't think you have. Book.
It's during Gate of the Feral Gods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which you're reading right now.
I'm not there yet. Yeah. All right.
this she's, character is a character that you're like, what?
And you then know when you meet leaves.
I will she stays it. Forever.
Okay. Yeah. Would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
There's the a TV show coming out.
Is in production, and guess what? They made an announcement literally this week, so perfect timing. Does Casey know this announcement? Yes, I sent it.
You know this announcement.
I'm not sure I actually looked at it. Did I say something?
They announced who will be playing Princess Donut in the Peacock produced
TV right, show. Okay. Yeah, I did see that.
And it is Jeff Hayes who narrates the books, because
it's iconic. Princess
Donut's voice anyone else.
No, like literally the fans would riot if anyone else besides Jeff Hayes played Princess Donut, because he just has this really nice British accent that's so fucking good.
I hope he plays the Dungeon AI also.
I hope so too. He does a great AI voice.
But Princess Donut. Yes, it's a man, but the people who are loyal to the series know there's no other voice. Also, when I saw him talk, he said he'll probably never voice a female character in an audiobook again, because, you know, he has a wider range of male voices he can do, but he doesn't have as many female ones. And he's like, it's forever Princess Donut now.
Well, like, and also there's a lot of female characters. Like, Princess Donut. There's a lot of female characters in this book or in the series. So, like, he's had to pull out some things out of his bag.
Yes. And they've been pretty epic.
Yes.
Anyway, now I compare every audiobook narrator ever to Jeff Hayes, so sorry.
And none can compare, so.
Casey Local.
Is he really?
It's Sound Booth Theater, Kansas City area.
Oh, wow. Oh,
that's why on the tour stop for Operation Bounce House, we were the only tour stop with Jeff Hayes.
That's pretty cool.
Because he lives here.
Holy, yeah, that's pretty cool. Oh, yeah. I think we'll all give the TV show a try when it comes out.
I just like, what budget does Peacock have? Because almost none of these characters can just be people in costumes.
The CGI is going to be kind of insane.
Like, has Peacock been saving all their money from years and years just for this?
Yeah.
Is Love Island funding Dungeon Crawler costs?
I was just that about to say
crazy.
That.
I mean, like, basically.
Totally. Yeah. No, that's totally what's happening.
Actually, we should start telling that Love Island is paying for Dungeon Crawler Carl. Because the Love Island DCC pipeline's got to be pretty solid.
No, it actually is. Like, girls were just, like, posting about how, like, I'm watching Love Island while reading Dungeon Crawler Carl.
The girlies are having a Dungeon Crawler Carl summer, okay?
Hot girl summer.
I hate that. I actually can't stand that.
I pulled in to work this week in the car next to me. I work for a school district, okay? So this is extra funny. The car next to me had a sticker that had donut on it and said, "Hi, Zev." And I was like, whose car is this? Anyway, I found a fellow nerd at work in a very not so fun and nerdy place, so.
Well, yeah. Well, that brings us to Busy Girl Rating. What are you guys going to give the book?
I'll give it a 4 because I do think it is worth the read. And I think it is quicker read if you're listening to it on audiobook.
Or if you listen to it on 1x speed only in your 5-minute commute, like me, it's a longer read, but
but still worth.
But I agree with your 4. If you've made it through book 1, you're here at book 2, definitely worth the read. It's just like, it's not for everybody. You really have to kind of parse through this one because like the stuff, the world gets way more complicated. So I'm not going to give it 5 stars because you have to think a little more.
Yeah, I agree. I'm also going to give it a 4. I feel like it's still a great book. It's still a fast read, but you get a lot more kind of like info dumping, lore building, fantasy world building, different species, different kinds of narratives. So I think this book, like, I think Dungeon Crawler Carl 1 is a very fantasy beginner friendly book. I don't really feel that way about this one. I feel like this one is a lot more like typical fantasy fan kind of thing.
You're invested now.
Right. So hopefully you're along for the ride. But if not, it's going to get harder to understand everything.
Correct.
To the point, the end of book 8 that I just listened to. I may have to go re-listen to because now even I was getting lost. If that tells you how deep it's gonna go.
Oh, it's convoluted. There's a lot going on. It makes you miss the first books because they're very simple.
I'm a fantasy sci-fi like deep diver, and that was a lot for me. So yeah. Just know what you're getting yourself into.
So true. Spoiler alert. So we're about to ruin the plot of the book. This one does have a really interesting epic plot with new characters, other crawlers, different species, different kinds of tasks. So yeah, don't spoil it for yourself. Don't ruin it for yourself. Come back when you've read the book and listen to us discuss it.
Okay. So first book is 2 floors, and you have to survive the first 2 floors to get to the 3rd floor, which is the first kind of like city floor. It's a bigger storyline than just a dungeon level. It's like a settlement kind of vibe. And this one very much gives you like typical like Dungeon and Dragons quest theme, you know, silly video game side quest vibes. But if you make it to the 3rd floor, you get to choose a new race and class, which I feel like was the most anticipated thing at the end of book one.
Yeah, it's a little, it's tough. Luckily, the characters that we know and love don't change that much. But yeah, it's really fun that they get to pick their own thing. And Donut picks something that basically ensures Mordecai has to help them constantly. So
yes, she becomes a former child actor that requires a manager, and that manager is Mordecai. It was so perfect. And I love the fact
Mordecai was like done. If they died, he got to leave the dungeon.
Yes, it was last season.
His final season, he is tied to a cat.
Yeah, he does not get to go peacefully to the end of his contract, that's for sure.
That's okay. He didn't need to go peacefully.
No.
The fact that Odette was kind of meddling in that, telling Carl, no, you can't let him know that you're tricking him into this, but you need him as a helper.
Basically. Which
TBD
I love.
On if Odette is helpful or not in the long run.
TBD, yes.
But the Mordecai thing pans out all right.
Yes.
Yeah. I love Odette. I love that we're not clear on what her motives are, mm-hmm. but that she, as long as it's in her best interest, is willing to be helpful. So
let me just be clear. Book 8, still don't know her motives.
Yes, we still don't know her motives. She's coming, though.
It's building, but I don't know her purpose still.
But we do know there is
a chaos.
Yeah, there is a past between her and Mordecai, and that's why she cannot... They cannot let him know that she came up with this idea.
Yes, because he won't want to do it and he'll figure out a way to get out of it. And so they had to like secretly do this thing. Because again, Mordecai is like a grumpy old man. Like he doesn't want to be that involved, even though he also kind of does because he's so into the dungeon.
Well, and so Donut is clearly impulsive. The personality she develops as a sentient cat is impulsive. So they play it off as she's just being impulsive, but she's smarter than she looks.
Mm-hmm. They had a plan.
Great actor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Well, our first question is kind of interesting because it's about the elites, quote unquote, and the TV shows within the dungeon. I thought that this was interesting, but I actually really didn't like the whole like TV show storyline element of things, because I was like, it just felt so convoluted to me. Like I was like, why is this, is there so much happening, so much being filmed in this dungeon? It just feels like too much is going on in this dungeon all the time. I really like the traditional kind of quest going out on the open road thing, and I liked their interactions with the elites. Like I liked that the challenges in general were more frequent and more difficult. But for me, I didn't really need the whole like, oh, we're doing this other show that like kind of involves crawlers at some points.
I think what I like about it is it makes you realize that like even though the crawl is televised, people really still don't give a crap about the crawlers. They're just pieces used to produce even more shows beyond the crawl. Mm-hmm. And so I like the jab it kind of takes at capitalism across the universe and how annoying it is for the crawlers to try to survive, just survive, and then you throw this stuff in.
It's a commentary on capitalism and reality television and the idea that it is scripted and you are kind of thrust into this. And even though it's a crawl with quests, these elites are bought for by these production companies to sell a plot and sell a storyline. And now it kind of thrusts the crawlers into this system where they can't get out. Like, they have to complete the storyline or else like this production company could kill you very easily. So you have to play the part of a willing participant in this reality television show that is your life, as people are thinking that this is scripted television, but also this is the reality of Carl and Donut.
It's definitely a good point in like eking every dollar bill they can get out of this, like just doing any tiny possible thing to make a few more bucks off of the dungeon, to the point that it's crazy, because it also highlights the unfairness, because this is a huge point of it for Donut and Carl, is that they have to find a way to make their victory work with what they assume the plot is of this kind of like separate show they stumble into. So they basically like either they die or they find a way to make the fact that they've survived more compelling. So it's another thing of like, it's not just about surviving the dungeon in like a fair way. It's actually like continuing on the theme of like, you have to be entertaining, you have to convince the writers of the show to like let you live, basically.
Yep,
you're playing a game in a game.
Yeah. Okay, so Carl and Donut did make race and class choices, even if it didn't change much of their presentation. So Carl is a primal, which I still find very interesting and mysterious.
You'll learn more.
Will you?
Kind of.
This is something that is going to, it's one of these things planted at the beginning that's just like, you learn a little more, but it's going to be something mind blowing at the very end. And you know.
Oh, yeah.
Because Carl kind of ends up choosing it because it kind of has some like mysterious benefits. And then he's also a compensated anarchist, which is also interesting, very much in line with his philosophy in the dungeon. Mm-hmm. Donut is a former child actor, which forces Mordecai to be her manager. What did you guys think of those selections? Did you wish that they changed more?
I liked the thought that went into explaining the choices and how, you know, Carl didn't want to change. And this essentially allowed him to upgrade himself without changing, really. And so it was interesting, you know, the humanity behind the decisions being made. And also, he wanted to burn it all down. So the compensated anarchist just seemed really perfect. But like, you hear all the options, it's very thorough, and they're all like decent options. So like, you watch these characters, you learn a lot about them by seeing them weigh the different decisions and choose these races and classes.
Yeah, it's definitely like nothing in this book is glanced over or overly convenient. So because they mentioned too in the book that like characters that become famous early on are normally punished if they change their appearance, because then their fans have a hard time like connecting with their like new aesthetic, new powers. So it generally works better to kind of like stick with something in the realm of what you've already got.
And we also learn from like other crawlers that their game guides are not as helpful as Mordecai. And so they make decisions about their class and races based on very bad information and bad advice. And so they become things that they didn't expect to become, that ended up biting them in the ass a bit. So it's very interesting that like they have someone as competent as Mordecai, who obviously like survived the dungeon and went through it and has now been in there for like, I think they said 400 seasons. This is like his 400th season of Dungeon Crawler World. So he knows this dungeon inside and out. And yeah, he was hesitant for Carl to choose Primal because he was like, the level ups are not going to, it's going to be a lot of grinding. And he was like, we just don't know enough about them. And it makes it intriguing.
Yeah. There's also like, you learn a lot about through Mordecai and his situation, how basically, even if you made it out of the dungeon or made it to the point where you could do what Mordecai did and take a deal, your options are crap no matter what. So you kind of learn how lose-lose the game is, and you kind of get like the why keep going, but also these characters do.
Right. The game, the story does a good job of showcasing a lot of unfairness, which is like very relatable, honestly. Like, again, on the point about Mordecai, where like most crawlers' guide is useless. That's just like so typical, right? In this gigantic bureaucracy where most of the people here are slaves, they're not real employees who even wanted to do this. They're like past crawlers who are forced to do this. The playing field just isn't level, right? Like Carl and Donut are so lucky to have Mordecai as a player who actually really cared to learn about the game and be a player and a contender, which I think is also part of why I've always been so interested in Mordecai, is he like made it like the second longest, I think, of any crawler. And so he kind of knows what he's about. And there's this kind of implied betrayal there in storyline. Anyway, the point being, you can see how so many people die in the games just because the help they were getting was not really help.
Correct. Well, we're learning that these game guides are former crawlers and they experience the crawl very differently from each other. So some are extremely traumatized individuals who are may or may not be coping in different ways. So they might not be helpful to people because they're still kind of drowning in their own self. But Mordecai's had a little bit more time to separate himself from the crawl a bit.
Yeah. Okay. So the first big battle, that dungeon, oh my gosh, my words today, that Carl and Donut really encounter is the circus. There's this really messed up, like enchanted, like zombie circus kind of thing. It's one of the like shows that has storylines that play out on other floors. And so the episode they're in is like Revenge of the Daughter. So basically this kind of banished daughter comes back to like reclaim the circus from her father. That's one of the big plot points. There's also this Skyfowl town, and all these kind of quest lines intersect and send Donut and Carl on a journey to complete them.
Yeah, it goes from simply surviving to like way more complicated.
Yeah,
they're like new people doing all this, just grinding away, trying to level up so that they're better suited for the rest of the thing. And then they meet Serena Signet and the circus. And
yeah,
it's basically like, you can't leave this floor unless you complete these quests, but you get awesome prizes if you do.
Right.
But you probably won't. Risk versus, you'll die.
Yeah. Risk versus reward. What are you willing to gamble? I don't know. The circus was creepy and cool. Mm-hmm. Kind of spooky, like you're really getting into the like purposeful elimination of mobs and things.
Yeah.
And actual battles.
Right. There's also like, I mean, I've mentioned already, like I kind of like how this is just like traditional D&D in this level, where you just kind of walk through towns and your path is kind of guided by the things that you just happen to stumble upon. I thought that all the storylines were really inventive. And we also, especially in Skyfowl Town, we get a lot of the theme that like the NPCs are real living creatures who are also unaware of the storyline at play. So the game kind of creates these narratives for Carl and Donut to follow, but the people in the towns are generally not aware of the plot line that they are also in too. So the game is like constructing these things with certain players, and regular NPCs are just as likely to be victims and to be confused and not understand their role in the ultimate plot, just like the crawlers, which I thought was really interesting, because we learn kind of that a lot of the townspeople avoid the crawlers because they're trying to avoid getting sucked into the plots that the crawlers are obligated to take part in.
Yeah.
It's like they're brainwashing these people.
The showrunners know that the crawlers are unaware of what they're a part of, but the crawlers know that the NPCs are unaware of what they're a part of. And it's mm-hmm. just like,
and everyone,
the showrunners are the villains.
Yeah. Producers, just like in regular reality TV, are the villains. But it's interesting because there's like really extreme varying levels of awareness. There are NPCs that are fully autonomous, fully cognizant of what's happening. There are NPCs that have basically been brainwashed and are fulfilling character arcs without even realizing it. So, yeah, very interesting.
Yep. Part of me forgets like what all I can say about NPCs and stuff.
Yeah, because it gets even more complicated as you get through the storyline and as you get through the books, because that's how that works.
Yeah, and all the people that we're talking about now come back. So there's the out of dungeon drama with Carl almost being assassinated by the maestro. What did y'all think of that?
Glorp glorp.
I definitely forgot about this part being in this specific book, and
I also thought this was in a later book. I'm like, I'm surprised this was book 2 actually.
So part of it is they get pulled to do all these stupid shows because they're popular crawlers. And so that's how they meet Odette. And that's how they end up meeting the maestro. And the maestro sucks. And I don't know. It's so funny. The snicks are the best part.
Yes.
I don't know. It sets off this. It's another one that you're like, I just know this is going to last the whole series. And it really so far has. So it's a rivalry for the ages.
Right. I do like the maestro's commentary just on like that kind of toxic alpha culture. And I like that Carl and Donut always have the opportunity to outsmart him by kind of becoming aware of whatever kind of trap he's laying for them. But I'm more interested in seeing how he comes up later, because it's implied that he's very important to Donut's curse with her tiara. So.
Yep. Forgot about that too. the crown of the sepsis whore.
Here we go. I forgot the official title.
As it comes back into play for sure.
Oh yeah, it does.
Donut gets a pretty tiara, so she puts it on because she's a showgirl. And it comes with a thing where she won't be able to get off of the ninth floor, faction wars, if yes. they make it there, without killing every single person in the Blood Sultanate.
The royal line of succession, and it's run by the Nagas,
which are snake people. So you already know it just sets this book sets up so many future problems. But yes, the maestro, he also sucks. And you get to meet Carl ends up helping save some other crawlers from the maestro, which those crawlers come back around later and become very important parts of the series. So you're just like slowly meeting people who are going to drop in bigger puzzle pieces. And the maestro is actually like the most insignificant part of it all.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is, it's like Casey said, it's a like a commentary on like them being very like ahead of the game. And but he's also like a Nepo baby.
Yeah.
And that's all he is he's a Nepo baby. He's an idiot Nepo baby that has a show because his daddy gave it him his show.
Yeah. I think part of why this book is so good is because it's really still a setup book, but it doesn't feel like a setup book.
Yeah.
Because it's really laying the groundwork for the later books while still being relevant and interesting in its own right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like, this book is fun because there's so much to absorb. So you're just like trying to take it all in and you want more, 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 more. Meanwhile, this man is somehow still keeping track of levels and layered items and inventory and all this other stuff that like you somehow are also keeping track of in your head because everything's going to come back at some point.
Yes.
So this one random yogurt thing he has is going to be important.
Okay, so among the additional cast, Carl and Donut end up picking up another team member, basically, whose name is Katya, and she's kind of figuring out the game. She's a lot farther behind than they are when they meet her, but she has some good skills, and she's connected to another player, Hecla. Which I think comes out later. So yeah, what did you guys think of her?
Well, we met Hecla at the Maestro show.
And Hecla the dungeon.
She's not the Maestro show. It was like a podcast or something. It was like a round table. That's where the Maestro assassinated the Naga Queen.
Right. So, there's so much.
Yeah, Hecla's like the number one crawler. And so she has this band of female like Valkyrie warriors, they're called the Daughters. And Katya is this abandoned daughter, essentially.
Yeah. She's like a cult leader, basically.
Yeah. Katya is the like, what are you talking about? That's what I thought. You don't meet her in this book.
Yeah, you do.
Katya? No, you don't.
Yes, you do.
No, you don't. I literally just Google it to double check. You get her on the train level.
No, she shows up in this level because they pick her up in this one. No, yes.
Oh, during the...
I think Catherine's right. I think they meet her, but she sticks with Hecla.
Yeah. Because they meet her on this level to go save her, or to help her, because Hecla asked them to. And then, so they meet up towards the end of the book, and then they go down the train level together.
You're right. Okay, sorry. See how confusing this is, guys?
There's so much.
Yeah. Honestly, I'll leave this in because I got confused.
Yeah. Yeah. But basically, they meet Katya because Hecla asked them for a favor, and Katya's in the Skyfall City and she needs help, and she's really underleveled. And she's also this weird kind of, I don't even remember her race, but it's a creature thing where she can morph herself into other things, but she has to like physically mold her body.
Doppelganger.
Yeah, doppelganger. Yeah. She has to physically mold her body, and she's an artist. So her game guide told her to pick it because she's an artist, not thinking about how like hard that is to like mold yourself.
And she can take in more mass to be.
Yeah.
It's very complicated. And Carl sort of starts using her as a human wrecking ball when she allows it. But mostly in this book, she's like too timid. And it's just kind of like a sack of potatoes they're dragging around.
I really did not like Katya as she's introduced in this book. And I think I was very suspicious of her because I didn't trust Hecla, which I think Carl and Donut are kind of on the same page about that. Like, but yeah, she's very timid. She's really behind them in skills. So she doesn't have a lot of confidence. And to her credit, she has kind of been effed over. Like, she did not get good advice. She's kind of now trying to take advantage of this creature that she's become, but this power is just hard to develop, hard to like use in a useful way. And she's also like not the priority for Hecla either, right? Like, she's part of this band of women, but she's not like one of the core members of the group. So she's really just like a lost little butterfly.
Yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't have much of a personality because she's still scared and she doesn't know how to game the system yet.
She's very quiet at first. Like, she actually is, like, a very shy person.
And, like, she grows as a person throughout the books. We learn a lot about her past and her history and her why she is the way she is. But also, this is kind of the start of the book where Donut kind of takes her under her wing, in a sense, because Donut is a showgirl.
Donut's trying to, like, rebrand her.
Yes. So Donut tasked herself with rebranding Katya to make her more palatable for the masses.
Yeah. Siri play popular from Wicked.
Literally. Literally.
In this book, Katya is quite frankly kind of boring and kind of a wet blanket. And
yeah,
just kind of blankets
is a good way to describe her. This did not directly connect to my feelings of sexism in this book, but it also did not help that I felt like the one female character that is, like, added to the gang, like, sucks. And so, yeah, luckily she doesn't suck forever, but I don't know that I'm ever really a Katya girl.
See, she becomes one of my favorite characters by the end of the series. So,
long way to go. Okay. So the climax of the story is this really crazy, intricate plot where basically Carl discovers that essentially the game runners, because it's in the interest of the game runners to make the game as short as possible, have kind of constructed this overall plot where the crawlers are almost assured destruction. And Carl kind of manages to finagle this solution, kind of taking advantage of the rules of inventory, because you can't set off bombs in your own inventory. So Carl, like, jumps on this soul crystal, puts it in his inventory, and then the showrunners get involved because they don't feel like he should have been able to do that, because it kind of foils their plot to basically eliminate a huge number of the crawlers.
Sorry, no, we haven't really even talked about this portion of the floor, but on top of the circus and trying to, like, live, there's this whole, like, the town has a corrupt leader that's, like, gutting women and using them to abduct souls, blah, blah, blah. It's a lot.
It's very dark murder mystery, like a whole third of the book is, like, about this, like, very dark murder mystery with these, like, murdered women and corrupt leaders.
And they keep getting quests, and the quests are either about the circus or this.
Right. And the quests are, like, very clearly, like, not taking them to the heart of the issue. And they get frustrated in the story because they can tell there's, like, other things happening and they're being kind of routed away from the center. Yeah. But then they end up stumbling right into the center, and then they don't like that either because then it gets really hard.
Basically, Carl and Donut end up saving so many people by this stupid, stupid thing Carl does. And this bomb is about to explode, so he can basically never take it out of his inventory ever again. He's got, like, a nuke in his inventory.
That is named Carl's Doomsday Scenario.
That's what the AI named it, yes. And they should all get rewarded greatly, according to the AI, for surviving what should have killed everybody. So everybody's supposed to be rewarded these celestial boxes, which are supposed to be really, really rare dungeon loot. And while they're, like, between floors, because they jump into a stairwell to try and survive, you get into the very tip of the iceberg of the legal battles behind the show, where it's very, very expensive to the showrunners to have to give these celestial boxes. And so they sue so that they don't have to. But one guy still got his because he hadn't gone down yet.
Yeah, they end up, this is, like, another, I love the court cases. These are, like, that's, like, a highlight for me of, like, the out of dungeon experience, is that the AI is technically autonomous. And because it's autonomous, it's considered, like, an objective, fair decision maker. So none of the actual showrunners are supposed to interfere with the AI's decisions and interpretations of the rules. But Carl survives by essentially exploiting a loophole that the showrunners hadn't considered. So the showrunners are suing because they don't want to actually give Carl and all the crawlers the loot. And they end up changing the rules after the fact, because they don't want, like, people to keep being able to avoid things by like putting things right in their inventory. And
celestial loot would help them level up way too fast for where they're at, and they want them to die.
Right. They would become more powerful and have a much higher chance of surviving when they want them all to die.
Right.
Yes. And because
and it's expensive, and there's like this whole thing we still haven't even talked about either, where the people running the show are about to go bankrupt. That's why they're rushing it, because they're trying to make money and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. The Borant system is going bankrupt, and this is probably their last crawl. And they actually sped up the crawl start date because of it.
And this many celestial boxes would bankrupt them.
Because it was like 50 crawlers that they were going to give celestial boxes to. And so they sued and they used their veto power, which is the only time that they can use it for both Carl and Donut. And then it ended up being that only Quan CH got a celestial loot box, which causes some animosity from Carl and Donut's end against this man.
Donut likes pretty shiny things. And now this man can fly with his cape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's kind of a dick.
Well, we find that out later, but yes.
We found that out.
More crawlers.
He was a dick in this book.
Yeah.
I'll just say, not every player is as much of a team player as Carl and Donut.
Most are not. They're usually either happy to go along with their plan just because they have one, or they're trying to like do their own thing. But you do, the third floor is the first time where like they're working with other crawlers because they're all in the same place instead of just running the halls of the dungeon by themselves.
Yeah, they had a world quest.
Your world expands. It's very exciting.
Yeah, it's our first time experiencing quests.
Plus, we still get to hear from our friends at Meadowlark.
Yes.
They're not
Ellie
together.
Bonnie.
But.
Yeah. It was interesting. To me, this was a great next step in the series. It added a lot to what was already contributed. Sets you up to expect even more. It was a good book too, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we talked about it a lot, but we also barely talked about anything, if that makes sense. So,
dude, yeah, there's just
like the more we talk about it, I'm like, oh yeah, this happened. Oh yeah, this. And then I think about how many implications this book had on the rest of the series. I'm like, oh.
Oh yeah, like books
go back and read
one
again.
Through three are truly just setups for the rest of the series. And then even book four is kind of a setup for the rest of the series a little bit.
Yeah.
Matt Denneman has said we will see all the floors of the dungeon. But book nine will be a two-part book and will be the last one. So
they're about to speed run this bitch.
Do what you want with that. This is one of the few books I feel like that we get actually one floor and only one floor.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
the next few are one floor each.
Lots of storylines. Lots of surviving writers in this floor.
Yes. The human race is resilient.
Yeah.
I'm right, we are.
Well, our last question is, will you continue the series? And of course I will, hoping to finish it along with Catherine and Caitlin as soon as I have another gap in my schedule.
I don't reread books. Like ever, unless they're Harry Potter, really. I've listened to the audiobooks. I might go back and actually physically read the books just so I make sure I get as much as I can out of them.
Well, so I've been told by friends that read the books that there are secret special like chapters at the end of the books, the Pineapple
Cabaret. Backstage of the Pineapple Cabaret.
Yeah. So I might have to in order to read those. And also,
so Jeff Hayes at the author event I went to was like, hey, I love that you love the audiobooks, but you're missing so many of the nuances of the written word, the grammar, the syntax when you only listen to audio. So I love that you listen to me, but go read the book.
Yeah. And also, I can't believe I haven't mentioned this. I'm going to be meeting Matt Denneman and Jeff Hayes this week at my nerd convention.
I just like saw them.
I'm going to be watching them play their new board game for Dungeon Crawler Carl, and then hopefully get my book signed by Matt Denneman and Jeff Hayes. And I'm very, very excited. I'm dressing up as Princess Donut. So as you can tell, I will continue with the series till the day I die.
Let us know if you want to see pics of Catherine on our Instagram.
Oh, no. Don't make
me do that. She's like, oh.
Yeah, Catherine will never show us her cosplay again if we do that.
I will share it with you guys. That's fine.
Do we want to do book recommendations or no?
No.
No. Read Dungeon Crawler Carl.
Keep reading.
Exactly. keep reading. These are just our opinions. This is kind of a whirlwind of the of a book, so it's kind of hard to discuss because it's just like so much happening. But it's a crazy wild ride. We hope you guys continue on with the series. Let us know if you want us to do book three. And yeah, you can talk to us at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere.
I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.